Welcome to the John Gambling Show with special co-host Mayor Michael Bloomberg on News Talk Radio 710 WOR. Now, here are John Gambling and Mayor Michael Bloomberg.
Bill Rock, you are right. Thank you very much for that introduction. It is a Friday morning, and Mayor Michael Bloomberg is here. Mr. Mayor, welcome. Good morning.
Thank you. The rain has almost stopped, I'm happy to report. It's actually supposed to finish sometime early afternoon and be a nice weekend. Chilly, breezy, but sunny.
A nice spring weekend. You and I did not speak last Friday. I was away, but I saw a glorious picture of you from your performance last Saturday night at the Inner Circle.
Used the cast of hair. I dressed appropriately for a hippie in the 60s.
Flower shirt, long hair.
Long hair. My recollection is that was not the real me back in the 60s.
That was about to be one of my
questions. I had a crew cut.
Wall Street guy.
No, but where I grew up in Boston, people didn't wear long hairs. People didn't burn their draft cards. People didn't go to Canada. I mean, there's a handful in the papers.
Hung out in a different place in Boston than I did when I went to Boston University.
Well, because I'm much older than you. But then night before last, went to see Hair on Broadway, which is a great show.
The real thing.
I saw it back in the late 60s in public theater and then on Broadway. Then I saw it 2 years ago at the public theater in Central Park. Now it's back on Broadway. Great production. Young cast. Spectacular. All of them. They're exciting. They're fun. It is a show that was a protest against the Vietnam War. Having said that, you smile all your way through. And this is one tiny scene. I won't ruin the plot for anybody, which is sad. If you're my generation, you remember those days, and you remember what war is about and how terrible it is.
And how controversial hair was.
Yeah, I mean, one of the great sins in this country is we treated the Vietnam vets terribly. We drafted them. We sent them over. Some of them paid the ultimate price, and those that managed to get back alive, we didn't take care of them, and we didn't give them the respect and gratitude that we should. They didn't start the war. It wasn't their decision. It was the public's decision. We elect the government, and our government did it. And whether you think it was good or bad, the Vietnam vets did not get treated as well. Fortunately, I think the country's learned, and we treat our vets from Afghanistan and Iraq and other places around the world.
Very appropriately, I think.
Right. Anyways, it's a great show, great cast, and at the end they invite a whole bunch of people up on the stage, so of course I get dragged up there, and there I am.
Well, you were an experienced actor.
Absolutely. I have my SAG card, the Screen Actors Guild, so I was perfectly legal, and I was dancing and hugging all the cast.
Did you sing in the Inner Circle show?
I did. I sing one note. Everything is one note. That's one of the problems. I try to memorize my dance steps. Sometimes one of the actresses will whisper to me, the other right. But it was a lot of fun, and then we took some pictures on the stage, and then I went out to a very late dinner and had a good dinner.
Well, I'm glad to hear that.
But it was fun. I urge everybody to go see Hair.
All right. The night after that, which was, of course, Easter night in Times Square, ugly as it gets.
Well, every year, for a number of years now, a bunch of rowdy kids, adults, have been going to the last day of the auto show and then afterwards creating problems in the street. Police department knows this. Ray Kelly massed 350 cops to stop any problems. What was different this year is they didn't go to the auto show, leave about 7 and march to Times Square. They showed up around 9:30 directly in Times Square. Don't ask me why. Now, keep in mind, you cannot arrest somebody until they do something wrong. They started right away. We arrested 45, 50 kids. There were a couple of shootings. It was kids arguing organized gangs, but groups of kids passing each other and starting fights, and there was a couple of shootings, and we arrested those people. And I was pleased to see Cy Vance, the new Manhattan district attorney, at the courthouse saying, we're not going to plea bargain, telling his ADAs, no, we're going to prosecute. This behavior is totally unconscionable. And, Ray had as many police officers as can fit there. We are not going to tolerate behavior like that. And I think if the district attorney really prosecutes, that will send a message to these people. I think these kids are young adults. They go out there, they don't think there's any consequences. If, you know, they get busted by the cop, you get a desk ticket and you go home, no big deal.
Precisely.
Well, we've got to make sure it is a big deal. That's the only deterrent that is really going to work. The police can arrest you, but the police can't change people's minds about what to do. That's really up to the district attorney and the judges. And I think the judges have got to understand, you know, if you have somebody that comes in and goes out and in and goes out.
Well, there's an indication that at least one of these kids has been in and out of jail lots of times.
You know, look, each judge, and when I interview judges, I always ask the question, what do you do with a kid that jumps the turnstile the first time? What do you do the second time? After the 10th time, what do? Send the kid away to jail or incarcerate him for a long period of time? He may learn how to be a worse criminal. Don't do anything. Society falls apart. There's no right answer, but I think the judges have to understand that we just aren't going back to the days where the behavior of a handful of people wasn't very important, because it is important to society.
Now, the fact that the police department has been aware of these gangs gathering on Easter after the car show, it goes back to 2003, I think I was reading, and it happens on a yearly basis. Now that these kids, what they're doing is tweeting or texting each other, that, you know, that's how they're communicating, like all
absolutely.
Of us.
Absolutely. I mean, it makes it much more difficult.
Is there no way or can the police department infiltrate those sort of things to kind of get the
heads
up? Well,
let's assume, if they did, why would they tell you?
Well, I understand.
Okay, that. I mean, you know, let me say this. The police department uses every legitimate legal means to obtain information and to prepare for anything that we think is likely to happen. You can't be every place all the time. And 350 cops in Times Square is a lot of cops. At this point, it is, we knew what was going to happen, we were there, we arrested them, but you got to make sure you change the mindset of people to think that they can get away with that behavior. And I think now the key is up to Cy Vance and his assistant district attorneys and the judges.
Okay. Let's hope it doesn't happen again. Now, is there any indication that that Halloween is another one of these?
We've had less problems on Halloween, but, you know, that's another time when kids think that they can do something and get away with it. We're just not going back to the 70s. And there's a lot of, you know, I think most people understand that. People are moving into the city. Companies are staying here. We had JetBlue. We have to stay here. Population record levels. Unemployment's gone. The economy's actually doing much better here. Will a full recovery take time? Yeah. Hotel occupancy's up. Broadway ticket sales are up. People are coming. But I think you got to put it in perspective. Crime is lower. This is the 9th year in a row that crime has come down, and we're going to keep bringing it down. There were a few more murders, 20 more than last year. Yes, 20% more. But if you compare it to 2 years ago, it's 10% lower than it was 2 years ago. You get the rate down so low that the numbers up and down are big percentage changes, but we are not walking away from our responsibility. We are keeping the streets safe. We're not going to lay off cops, I said yesterday. Other parts of our city may have to do more with less, because this is where we're going to devote our resources. But we have made this the safest big city. We have the best police department. We're going to keep doing it.
Has Ray Kelly given you any indication or others indication as to why maybe the shootings are definitely up? The other day we had 6, I think.
It's interesting. Shootings are up, but murders from guns are down.
Okay, but do they have any suggestion as to maybe why this is going on? Economy, does that have any effect?
You know, some people say that, but during the Depression, crime was at a national low. During the Great Depression in the 1929s, any one of these things, if you look, there's a theory, rainy days, people stay inside, they don't go out and shoot. But keep in mind, a lot of crime takes place indoors. Economy down, how many of the criminals do you think go and read the Wall Street Journal? I mean, come on. You know, it is true, higher unemployment gives some people less opportunity, but most people that are unemployed don't go out and become criminals. That's ridiculous. They are hardworking people looking for jobs. We have to work and create jobs in the city so they have jobs. But, you know, if you want to fix one thing long term, I suppose, education. Mm-hmm. Long term, that is the key. Short term, however, all of these things, correlations, they're there once or twice, but then they're not there once or twice. And we don't quite know why there are fewer murders by guns and more by knives all of a sudden. But if you put it in context, the murder rate is so low that we have 5.5 million people that ride the subway every day. We did have 2 people murdered. We caught the people, the perpetrators, we think are guilty, committed committed the crime, and they're the first murders since 2007.
Yeah, there's no other to remember.
There's no other place with 5.5 million people every day that doesn't have some crime. We're down. We used to have 20, 30 crimes a day. Now we're down to 5 crimes a day total in the subways. It's virtually
non-existent. I mean,
if you're one of the victims, it's not non-existent. But yes, and comparing to last year, you know, we want to make sure it keeps coming down. But each week, it fluctuates, and the percentage fluctuations are great.
All right, let me take a break. I've gone a little long here with Mr. Mayor. It's 20 minutes after 8 o'clock. Don't forget, if you've got your question, you will have an opportunity, 800-321-0710. Give us a call if you've got a question for the mayor, 800-321-0710. Twenty-five minutes after eight, 8:25. John Gambling, Mayor Michael Bloomberg, on our Friday get together here. But your budget, we've talked all about the cuts and things. Are you going to have to cut pools, beaches, summer kind of stuff?
The real answer is until we know what Albany is going to do with their budget. I can't give you any concrete answers. Other than we 4 years ago started saving money, I kept saying this housing bubble's got to come apart and you can't have the kind of economy with the stock market going up every day. And so the city in 7 different steps took cuts to our expenses, and we put a lot of money away. We prepaid interest. We have some money put aside for health benefits for retirees, and tried to get ready for this. And overall, we are in good shape. There are constant pressure on every agency to do more with less. And the last thing you want to do in the summer is close pools and close after-school programs. There's virtually nothing the city does that I couldn't give you the same answer. Those are good things. Some generate revenue for the city. You don't want anything that would keep tourists from not coming here. You don't want to cut back things that would keep film crews from working here. All those industries are industries we depend on for jobs. You can't cut police. We just talked about that, and we're not going to. But you want to make sure that an ambulance or a fire engine or a truck shows up quickly when you have a problem. You want to keep the streets clean. You have to incarcerate the prisoners. We talked about crime. There's no easy answers. We are in overall reasonably good shape. Between now and June, it could get a little bit better, a little bit worse, depending on tax receipts and that sort of thing. But the real 1,000-pound gorilla is the state budget. So until I find out what they're going to do, I can't give you a good answer. The governor had a proposal to cut $1.3 billion. That would have cost us 19,000 employees. Would have closed a lot of things. The state Senate came up with one that was not quite as bad, but a little bit worse. The Assembly came up with a budget proposal, which was, while I wasn't happy about it, in all fairness to Shelley, it was better for the city, but substantially better for the city. The only thing I can guarantee is we're not going to lay off cops, because number one thing is to keep the streets safe, and that we will continue to do. Although our level of police has been constant for 3 or 4 years now, number of cops on the beat, because fewer cops are retiring. Attrition is, you know, slowed down when there's not a lot of alternatives out there in the private sector. And we've had some small classes of police officers. But it's all a function of what Albany does. And I don't think anybody can say for sure how they will come out or when they will come out.
Your
with the budget.
Budget has to be, you have to release your budget.
Legally,
June,
by
right?
The end of June, June 30th, and I can tell you we will have a balanced budget passed by that time. If the state has not passed a budget, it will have to have some pretty big asterisks in it. It will say, assuming X, Y, or Z, because I don't know what else you do. So I would much prefer the state to have their budget done, although, quite honestly, if it's timing or the quality of the budget, I want a budget that doesn't hurt the city. That's the main thing, but having it before June 30th would be very helpful. And there's some indication that later this month they'll actually come to an agreement. They're certainly talking, but, you know, until it's done and signed, it ain't done and signed.
Comptroller John Liu and also the Working Families Party have suggested that Wall Street bonuses get taxed upwards of half, 50% or more.
Well, if you want to move the industry out of the city, that's a good ways to do it. I mean, the bottom line is it's hard. You don't want to raise taxes on industries that can move. And there's an enormous competition for finance jobs. Keep in mind, in New York City, the average person that works in finance makes $70,000 a year, average. So if an industry were to downsize or move, the people that really get hurt are those at the bottom. Those at the top probably can afford to move with the industry and, in fact, would be incentivized to move with the industry. But it's all the support staff that gets hurt. 70 grand is, to put it in perspective, the same amount that the average worker on a production line in automobile industry in Detroit makes. And, you know, there's an awful lot of pressure and the federal level to protect, save, give money to General Motors and Chrysler. Ford apparently doesn't need it. They're doing a little bit better. In the meantime, taking it away from what's our main industry, which is finance, as opposed to their major industry, which is automobiles, is not something that would be helpful.
I quote you often on one thing you said probably about a month ago, that 10%. 100 people here in the city of New York pay 10%
roughly,
of the taxes.
That's correct. And 5,000 pay 30% and 30,000 pay 50%.
And yesterday there was a story about those similar statistics nationally. 10% of the population pays 75% of the taxes in the United States.
Yeah, I mean, it varies, but right. The concentration is very high. There is the argument that the wealthy don't pay their share. It's a definition of what their share is. There is a graduated rate in most income taxes in America, so that wealthy people pay a bigger percentage, and the fact that there's more money in the calculation, they pay a lot more in dollars. But fairness is a subjective thing. What is clear is the economics. Governor got in a little bit of trouble the other day talking about inheritance taxes. This state, for the record, does have an inheritance tax. But there are states that do not have inheritance taxes. And what is worrisome is those 100 people with 10% of the taxes are income taxes for New York City. Income's about $7 billion a year. Sales a little more than that, property about $17 billion. But you could see older people who have made a lot of money and love living here saying, look, I want to pass it on to my family. If I go to a state without an inheritance tax, I'll be able to pass on an awful lot more. Or people who are on an ongoing basis making a lot of money saying, you know, the tax rates are a lot less elsewhere. And while I love New York, I don't have to be here that much and I travel a lot. And, you know, if you're here less than 182 days a year, you're not a citizen for tax purposes.
All right, Mr. Mayor, let's take another break right here. Again, let me remind you, if you've got a question for Mayor Michael Bloomberg, we have a telephone line, 800-321-0710, 800-321-0710, Joe Bartlett at 832.
Tell John what you think. News Talk Radio, 710 WOR, 800-321-0710.
22 now before 9 o'clock, here with Mayor Michael Bloomberg. Disturbing story in one of the papers, not sure which one might have been the Post, about the closing of Indian Point, that the Department of Environmental Conservation has some sort of licensing apparatus that they think might not be able to be passed, which would prevent them from continuing. That's a third of the electricity for New York City.
Look, I am as big an environmentalist, I hope, as I can possibly be, but you have to have a real world. We're not going back to living in tents and cooking over an open fire and not having electricity and things like that. We want to have modern things. We should worry about the environment and try to improve the environment, but we need electricity and we need have the ability to fly and drive and take trains and all of that sort of stuff. Indian Point generates, I think it's about a third, 30% or something of our electricity. Without that, electric rates would be much higher. That would hurt the economy. I've always thought nuclear power, you have to do it correctly, you have to do it safely, and you have to protect the environment to the extent possible, but it pollutes an awful lot less than coal, which is the worst. It's, you know, there's no other than saying doing without electricity, there's no perfect ways. You can say, well, let's use dams and hydropower, except that that hurts fish. And, you know, so there's always, there is a trade-off. And the environmentalists have to understand that. Most the rational ones do. I think the real question is, it's up to the governor to, this is a state agency,
right.
And plain and simple, you have the governor on. Tell him what to tell. You tell him, you're a voter too. Tell him what he should be telling the environmental people who work for him to do. I think you find a ways to help industries do what we want them to do, but do it in as environmentally friendly a manner as is possible and practical. We just are not going to, the public is not in support of things that will hurt their ability to feed their families and enjoy the great American dream. If it's going to be taken away for an environmental issue, they're willing to be pro-environment. But the way you get the public to be on board to protect our environment and leave a good, clean planet for our kids is to do it in a reasonable, responsible way, and not so much so that we can't have electricity. I'm just overstating it, but not by a lot.
How come the city reopened the Fresh Kills landfill looking for 9/11?
We didn't. We have, over the last year or so, in places where we've dug this time but never dug before, removed equipment and under it, those small pieces of property we've never done, we've taken anything that might be remains, and then we've gone over to Fresh Kill where we have the equipment to do the inspections to make sure that there are not remains. And then we have found some pieces which anthropologists identify as remains, and now we'll go and use all of modern technology to see if we can identify them. If the remains are identified, they're given to the families. If not, they go into this, it's going to be a crypt in the side of a wall at the World Trade Center Memorial Museum, which will open a year after the plaza opens. So 9/11/11 is the 10th anniversary. 9/11/12 is when we think the museum will be open. So we're not doing anything different. That's the right place to do it because we have the space and the equipment, and the anthropologists have worked over there. But it's just small amounts of within which we think there might be remains because they've not been sifted before. And we'll move them. We're moving them over there and doing it over there. And with as much respect as you can. I mean, these are remains of, you know, family members. They care.
St. Vincent's, the board has voted not to continue patient services as they exist today. Is there anything new that you can tell us about the survival of St. Vincent's or not?
You know, whether St. Vincent's could have been saved. If it was possible to save it, you would have had to do some things many years ago. St. Vincent's was put together, a bunch of hospitals who were struggling, a few good, and some were struggling, and invariably that just drags everybody down. The Berger Commission, which the state had, said there were too many beds in New York, and particularly in the city. Everybody would agree with that, except they all want them in their neighborhoods. The most important thing is a place to go that is in close proximity in an emergency. For example, if you have a stroke, the first 5 minutes are very crucial. If you break a bone, you could get in the, you know, ambulance and go a long distance to get to be treated. Time's not that critical. But the economics of hospitals are very tough. Chris Quinn, it's her district. She fought hard for it. But no other hospital was going to take this over. I thought, you know, it was nice that they tried, and I appreciate them looking at it. But all hospitals are struggling. And with the health care bill, you know, the ways they're going to pay for enhanced coverage is to reduce the monies that go for treatment, and that means less revenues for our hospitals down the road and for the doctors that work there and for the medical schools we train people. You know, the president's trying to find a ways, or Congress in all fairness in this bill, to cover more people, and they keep saying they're going to do it and spend less.
How do you do that?
You reduce the amount that you compensate a doctor for seeing a patient, for example.
The doctor's not going to see the patient.
Well, if we don't change our immigration policy, you don't have to worry about that because there aren't enough doctors.
That's what I'm saying. I know all of these things, right?
I mean, if you go to medical, you know, to become a doctor is roughly 10 years after college.
Right.
After college. Now, think about the number of people that can't afford to go to college, the number of people that go to college and have debts that come out of it. We're talking about adding 10 years onto it. And then if they get paid $25 for a visit, no, it doesn't. The economics don't work. You know, there's just a limit we have to understand. There are choices and that we're going to have to make. And one of the choices is you'll be getting fewer tests. You're going to have fewer opportunities to see a doctor, longer waiting lines. You want to fix that? There are ways to fix it. The first thing is the two key things. You have to have immigration reform. We train doctors and then don't give them green cards. This is national suicide. We're doing the same thing with engineers. We're doing the people, same thing with people who are going to invent the next drug, except they're going to do it in India or China or Europe or someplace or Africa or someplace else. We give green cards. We don't give green cards to people who are going to start businesses. They're starting them around the world. We need these immigrants to be here. So you've got to fix immigration and then tort reform, because there's so much money that goes to malpractice insurance that's where there's nothing left for the doctor. Doctors got to feed their families. If they can't feed their families, they're just not going to be doctors, or they're not going to be doctors here where we need them. And the hospitals are all part of that. The pharmaceutical companies are all part of that. The ambulance companies. What New York City has done is, well, I've directed Sal Cassano, our chief of our fire department, to have fire department ambulances to pick up the tours that the St. Vincent's Ambulance Corps did pick up. I've directed Alan Aviles, who runs our Health and Hospitals Corporation, to make sure that Bellevue and other hospitals has extra beds for psychiatric patients and we can take this. But that is nothing. That just exacerbates our fiscal problem, because we're going to treat more people who don't have the money. If there was a lot of money, St. Vincent's would have been fine. The problem is they weren't getting paid for the services they were providing,
no matter how good the hospital was.
Tough
to run a business when you're not getting paid, when there's no revenue coming in.
And then nobody wants to work for you. It's surprising.
Yeah, isn't it, though? Census deadline is next week.
April 15th.
How are you making out? How's the city making out?
As of this morning, so I just did an interview on another Caribbean radio station, 50% here, 62% nationwide. Not doing all that well. What happens is they send your form. I filled mine out in less than a minute and a half. It's the simplest thing in the world. Then they send you another one automatically. But if you've already done it once, you don't have to do it again. Then we will use federal monies, your tax dollars and mine, to then ring doorbells up to six times to try to count. It'd be a lot cheaper if everybody just filled it out once. At day one, it would save a lot of money. We'd have more money for schools and hospitals and everything else. Okay, and we'd and if you want, for example, to have different immigration laws, well, you want to have more representatives then from New York City. Well, the ways you get it is by being counted. If you don't get counted, then we're not going to have the people. We're not going to have our share of Congress or our share of Albany that would get the things that we want done. And in the end, we'll get 95% of the people because we'll ring the doorbell six times, but it costs a lot of money to do that. Why is it worse here? It's worse here because we live in big buildings, and so it's hard to ring the doorbell. Sometimes the mail, if it goes to resident of, you know, the census records don't have how many different apartments, and or the guy, the doorman, doesn't get it to them. The census people that come around and ring your doorbell, hard to get into the buildings to go up to the 20th floor to ring a doorbell. People here work, a bigger percentage of people work, so they're not home during the day when we're trying to ring the doorbell. There is a lot of people who don't speak English here. We're an immigrant city. That's the great strength of New York. That's why our economy didn't go down as far as anybody else, as others, and has come back quicker because of the immigrant community, but it does make it harder. And then there are some immigrants who are worried about their documentation status. Let me just assure everybody, it's, you know, this number is for the census only. The U.S. Constitution requires us to do a census every 10 years, and the questions we ask are minimal.
It's just name.
That name, and you bang, 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 check a few things. That you say, well, where does the data come from when you read the census says there's more of this group, less of that group, more people are educated, less people with this? That comes from a continuous census that they do by telephone all during the decade. It's the physical census once every 10 years called for by the Constitution that they're doing now. And they used to have a long form and a short form. Now, it's just one quick long, short form.
As you said,
takes 2 seconds.
It takes no more than 90 seconds to fill it out. Mr. Mayor, we've got some questions. We will get to those in just a moment. I see that George has one line open. 800-321-0710. 800-321-0710. Coming right back.
Mayor Michael Bloomberg on the John Gambling Show. News Talk Radio 710 WOR.
We continue with you and your questions at News Talk Radio 710 WOR. Mr. Mayor, we'll start with Ferdinand. Hello, Ferdinand.
Yes, good morning, and I thank you for having me on. Mr. Mayor, thank you for the fine job your commissioner and your police officers are doing in New York City, keeping it safe and a happy place to be in and visit. I was born and raised in New York City, and I moved over to Jersey City, and taking into account Jersey City is right across the water, and the population has increased to a larger numbers, and of course taking into account also the problems that come along with that. Is there any coordination between the police commissioner and the chief of Jersey City Police in how to bring down the crime wave that I believe has taken place in Jersey City?
Well, you happen to have a good mayor who I know very well in Jersey City. I like him very much. The Jersey Police, Jersey City Police, Newark Police, all these police departments, and the New York City Police Department works together. They do gun busts together. Jersey uses our Office of Emergency Management. Early this morning, I think it was, we did a mock drill under the George Washington Bridge of what happens if somebody had brought a dirty bomb in a ship. We do that jointly with police departments in New Jersey and New York City. We work very well together. And there is good news about crime in Jersey. I saw Cory Booker, who's the mayor of Newark. Last month, they had not one murder in Newark. That month, it was the first out of something like 500 consecutive months with where they didn't have a murder. It's, you know, they deserve a lot of credit. And incidentally, their police chief was a former NYPD, so we can take
brag
some credit.
A little bit.
Jeremiah Healy, the mayor of Jersey City, is a good mayor, too. And I know he's directed his police chief to work together with us, and they do a good job at it.
All right, Ferdinand, there you go. Now let's go to Tony on line three. Hello, Tony. Your question right to the mayor, please.
Good morning, John. Good morning, Mayor.
Good morning.
Love the show. Mayor, before I ask you a question, I have to say, in my opinion, you're one of the greatest mayors in New York City.
I'm the best mayor the city's ever had since 2002.
Okay. I heard you mention that this morning there was about 5.5 million riders on the subway every day.
Yep.
I did the math. That's roughly $12 million a day. If you count only work days of the year, that's roughly $3 billion a year. If you add the weekends, roughly $4.5 billion. Why can't they handle their budget with that much revenue yearly?
There's a magical question.
Tony, plain and simple, it costs them more to run the railroad than the revenues from the railroad, if you will. Railroad includes buses and everything else. Right now, the MTA has a guy, Jay Waldner, who is I keep saying this, but it's true. He is a spectacular manager, and if anybody can run this agency, he can. His problem is that Albany has cut back its support. The fares that get collected as you go through the turnstile are a small percentage of only a percentage of the MTA's revenues. The state and the city also subsidize. We provide all the police protection, and we pay for it, for example. What we need to do is to find some ways to get more ridership on the subway and get people out of their cars and into the subway so we'll have more revenue for the same buses and subways. We need to have the buses go to different areas, more areas than they do now, and run more frequently so that it's more of a pleasurable experience. And we need to find another revenue source. And if you remember, the city came up with an idea to do this. We went to Albany. I think we had all the newspapers on board. They were in favor of it. We had all of the unions here on board. They were in favor of it. Albany said no, they had a better idea. So far, that idea hasn't been brought to the fore. And right now, the MTA does not have the monies they need to put security cameras in. That is not good. We should be ramping up our security using technology. They don't have any money to do it. Right now, we should be expanding the service and using technology to bus routes, make them faster, get people out of the cars. The clogged streets are hurting our economy. As you know, the city has not cut back its support for bus rides for kids to go to school. The state, which provides free bus service throughout the entire state, I think, for all kids, has just cut back their subsidy MTA and their subsidy for fares for kids. But it's not the MTA's management. It sounds like a lot of money, and it is, except that the expenses of technology, and they have a very expensive labor force. You can argue, you know, labor force would say it's worth it. That's fine. But the truth of the matter is, if you look at it, that's where the money goes.
And in the future, I think we're going to have to get to more automated trains and equipment.
Unless you use technology, you will always have this problem, John, of never enough revenue, because the labor force costs are always going to keep going up. That's why it was so important to find a separate source you could put in quickly that would give them the money so that they could go and buy the technology and implement it. And there are ways to do it, but Albany had a better idea.
All right, Mr. Mayor, our time is up. The clock continues to tick. That technology says it's time for us to go. We'll regroup next Friday. I will look forward to it. See you on Monday, everybody.
You just heard John Gambling. New York's best news talk continues next.